You may proceed.
My name is Catherine Ortiz, Public Defender, City of Chesapeake, appearing on behalf of Andrew Holloway. This is an unusual case because I know, honestly, misdemeanor appeals don't usually make it this far. But this is a situation where, when the summons was written by the officer, it included the language 74-4, which was a reference to the Chesapeake City Municipal Code, which incorporates the Motor Vehicle Code of the State of Virginia, and 18.2-103, which is the code that applies to unlawful concealment in the state code. When it proceeded to trial, he pled not guilty, was found guilty by the court, and after finding guilt, the appellant's counsel at the time made a motion to set aside the verdict on the grounds that the summons with the language 74-4 did not in fact cite or refer to a valid code section incorporating 18.2-103, and therefore there was no crime for which he could be convicted. The court at that time denied the motion to set aside. Subsequently, the orders were entered by the court. The conviction order that was signed by the court on June 9, 2014, from the trial of May 23, 2014, cited simply Code Section 74-4, which is the city's municipal code incorporating the Motor Vehicles Code. It did have language on it that said concealment and some crime code, but the actual code cite was for 74-4. At the same time, on the same date, presuming the same time, the order was entered by the court on June 9th, formal order denying counsel's motion to set aside the verdict, which had been made at the time of trial. The Court of Appeals entered the order granting the appeal on November 25th, 2014. Counsel filed his opening brief and appendix on January 5th, 2015, and it wasn't until May 15th, 2015, that the amended order was actually created by the trial court, where it presumably tried to correct the errors that originally arose, which is striking 74-4 from the initial order and amending it to Chesapeake versus, I think it was Commonwealth of Virginia, or instead of simply Chesapeake, and citing 18.2-103. That's where things got a little bit convoluted here. Our position is that the original order entered by the court, and even the summons on which Mr. Holloway was tried, did not, in fact, state an offense for which he could be convicted. 74-4 clearly only incorporates the Motor Vehicle Code and not the criminal code sections as cited on the
paper. If this was all just a typo and whatever, why wouldn't the nunc pro tunc take the wind out of your sails and just fix the problem?
Because, Your Honor, respectfully, I don't think it was just an error. Quite frankly, the court was given the opportunity.
But all along, there were citations to both the state code and the municipal code. And it's so that, in other words, there wasn't an instance where all along we proceeded exclusively under the city code, and then we tried to nod and wink and clean it up at the back end. I mean, there were conflicts all along. So which one was it, trial court decided that was an error? How do we go behind that?
Well, Your Honor, I will say this, that just a little over a month prior to when the trial occurred, the Court of Appeals addressed the very same issue in Amin versus County of Henrico. And they determined that because the language on the summons, even though it included both, the order itself said, referred to the city code, I think 22-2, incorporating 18.2-308. The Court of Appeals said that the code section 22-2 cited incorporating the concealed weapons statute, in fact, did not create an offense. We're no different here. But I will say that our position...
The problem, though, here you have a summons for concealment. And obviously 74-4 has nothing to do with concealment. 18.2-103 is concealment. So at the very beginning, to anyone with 4 seconds of attention, would have realized that the 74-4 is simply a clerical mistake. So I'm finding it difficult to understand how there's zero prejudice, and yet you're asking us to vacate a conviction that otherwise has pretty much irrefutable proof for.
Well, Your Honor, I really still don't see much difference between this case and the Amin case.
Well, with respect to the Amin case, we have this judgment in front of us, and whether the Court of Appeals took a different position from a different panel on a different day is really not something we worry about. It's what the in-bank Court of Appeals worries about. We got to figure out the right answer.
I agree, Your Honor, but our we're still in a position where, you know, basically you say what you mean and mean what you say. The summons clearly cited 74-4. It was not just an afterthought. It would appear that it was...
Right. It cites that and the state code, and then it gives a narrative. And this is my point. How could anybody be confused by that? How could anybody, certainly none of you and none of the litigants, would have thought that you're talking about the motor vehicle code, the city code?
You know, I don't know that that's necessarily where the concentration should be in terms of what we knew or should have known.
It is when it's a clerical mistake as opposed to a substantive mistake. If obviously, if the charge didn't mention concealment, and if the charge didn't mention 18.2103, then of course. I mean, that's changing the... They charged them wrong, they get hosed on that.
Well, I think that's where we disagree. Informed minds can disagree on such as... I don't believe that it was a clerical mistake. You know, as a practical matter...
They meant to charge him under 74-4, that they actually, whoever typed that in there or put that in the summons, the officer meant that?
I don't have any reason to believe that he didn't. And there's no evidence before the court to show that he didn't intend.
Maybe it's because it had nothing to do with the offense that was being charged, concealment.
I seriously doubt that the officer really understood the intricacies of what 74-4 meant, but that is in fact what he wrote on the face of the summons at the time that he issued it to Mr. Holloway back in 2013. Now, you know, and that's the problem, is if we might be in an entirely different position, quite frankly, if at the time the appellant's counsel made the motion to strike at trial, the trial court acted at that time. At that point, it's been brought to the court's attention. The court has put on notice. I think the court at that time potentially could have cured the error, simply saying, I'm going to strike 74-4, I'm going to rely solely on 18.2-103. But when the trial court judge further went on to enter the conviction orders, and it didn't even cite 18.2-103, it only cited the city code, the error was sort of magnified. This is a situation where, and I'll even note that in the Court of Appeals decision, they stated that the issue was moot because this amended order was entered. But I'll point out that the amended order was entered almost a year after the initial order was entered, and only after the petition had been granted, only after the designation of after the appendix and the opening brief had been filed, and I think even only after arguments had been set.
But the non-proton statute allows that to happen, right?
It does, assuming, Your Honor, that it is, in fact...
And you may be right, but the problem is the trial court had before it the claim that, well, if it's a clerical mistake, fix it, and if not, you can't, because you can't make substantive changes and clean up after the fact. So those are the two possibilities. I wasn't there. The trial judge decided it was a typo, and I'm going to non-proton the order. How do I go behind that? I mean, how would I know what the right answer is? That's the difficulty I'm having.
Well, I think that if you look at the fact that the issue was brought to the court's attention at the time of the trial, the court presumably would have had the recollection to know I need to be cautious in that and ensure that, in fact, the proper code section under which she presumably convicted, or what the appellee is asking the court to conclude she convicted, was actually entered on the conviction order. This is not simply a clerical error, but I would submit that by entering both the conviction order and the motion to set aside the verdict order at the same time, it was a conscientious decision by the court to file, to sign those. It was shown maybe some misjudgment on the trial court's part, but not simply a clerical error.
So you really think the trial judge intended to convict this defendant under 74-4 for something that has absolutely nothing to do with concealment? How could that possibly be?
Well, Your Honor, as I've been reminded on numerous occasions, the court speaks through its orders.
Well,
and that order is what reflected what the court intended to do.
The conviction order said guilty as charged as well, didn't it?
And the charge was citing both code sections.
Right. Well, this becomes circular at some point. The charge is concealment, and there's a citation given, and there are two. This city code, which has nothing whatsoever to do with concealment, and the state statute, which is the concealment statute. So this is obviously not a case where the prime charge, the original charge, unaffected by any confusion, is something completely different from what was heard by the trial court, decided by the trial court, and ruled on by the trial court. And in that case, of course.
I'm not quite sure.
I don't know how you get around the fact that it's simply a clerical mistake and not a single person in that trial court or the lawyers or the defendant thought that he or she was being convicted under 74-4.
Let me ask you a question, if I might. I do remember the Amin case. If I remember it correctly, the problem in Amin was that there was no Henrico County prohibition, because the ordinance itself didn't incorporate the code section, and no other ordinance did either, which made it impossible for it to be a clerical problem. It was just a problem where there was no power whatsoever to charge anybody under a Henrico County ordinance of the criminal act of carrying a concealed weapon. It didn't exist under the Henrico County ordinances. In this case, it does exist under the Chesapeake ordinances. It just was referenced improperly, which is why Amin is not entirely on all fours in a very significant way, because here there is one that incorporates concealment. It just wasn't properly referenced.
I guess then we get back to the issue of what is the Commonwealth's obligation to ensure that somebody is properly charged. This court's decision in Masika made it very clear that, I don't know if the Supreme Court, the Commonwealth Court of Appeals, but the Masika decision made it very clear that when you're convicted or charged under one code section but the facts prove something else, either the Commonwealth has to make a motion at the appropriate time or the conviction risks being reversed. At this particular point, if in fact the Commonwealth attorney had realized that this is the wrong code section, they could have made the amendment to 46-5. Or the court could have struck the 74-4. Or any number of things could have occurred, but the fact of the matter is, it didn't.
Right.
And I suspect that if we had been in a position where the defense had not made the motion to set aside the verdict, brought it to the court's attention, the court had made some references at least the statement of facts, about convicting of unlawful concealment under 18-2-103, this would be a very, very simple matter.
Well, then think through the logic of that. If it were truly a clerical mistake 10 seconds before the final order is entered, and it could be easily addressed by just directing the clerk to strike it out on the warrant and to make sure it's properly identified on the conviction, if it were a clerical mistake at that moment, why isn't it a clerical mistake the moment after conviction? And frankly, for the next 100 years, why isn't it still a clerical mistake which the non-protective statute can address?
Because, Your Honor, I'm not conceding it was a simply...
But assume, hypothetically, that the point is they could have all been addressed at trial because it's obviously a clerical mistake. Well, assume for the sake of argument only, not concession, that that's true. The non-protective statute says yes, and we give you authority pretty much indefinitely to correct clerical mistakes like this. What's wrong with that logic if you were to assume the first predicate?
I hate to be circular, but I mean, trying to argue a hypothetical with which I don't agree is somewhat...
That's what lawyers do.
I know. But the problem here is that this is something that was very well known to the court, and if in fact it had been a clerical error, it would have been changed at the time. But it was not. And in fact, it was not fixed until almost a year later, after the Court of Appeals had sent an order down to the circuit court directing that it be corrected.
Okay, but you referenced the motion to set aside earlier. I'm not sure I understand. I mean, according to the statement of facts, the trial court actually stated it was finding the defendant guilty of the Virginia Code section when it denied the motion to set aside, right?
Well, according to the statement of facts, granted, this is not a... verbatim recitation of what occurred. I think the issue was that the court came back and said that because the face of the summons also included 18-2-103, that she was going to deny the motion to strike or motion to set aside. I don't know that that can necessarily be concluded as her stating that she's convicting him of 18-2-103 concealment. She's just saying it was listed on the summons, so I'm satisfied with that. And I think that's part of the problem with the Court of Appeals decisions, they talk to the implied conviction under 18.2-103, but the statement of fact simply says the court says, well, it's on there, so that's good enough for me.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Ortiz. What is the significance, if any, to our analysis regarding the June 9th, 14 order of the Circuit Court?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's an improper order. I'm sorry, the June 9th, 14th?
June 9th, yes.
Which order? The conviction order or
right,
the motion
order? Yes.
I think it's very important because it does list the conviction code as 74-4, which is, on its own, non-offense. It doesn't actually refer to any motor vehicle code for which that code section would allow them to incorporate the state statute for purposes of trial and conviction.
The thing that I found interesting about that is that that order was entered after there had already been the motion to set aside had been argued.
Yes, sir. And that,
do you think that's significant?
I do, and that's why I think it's very significant that the trial court entered that order on the same day she signed the order denying the motion set aside. I don't think the argument can be made that she forgot that it was a pressure of mind because both the orders were entered by the court on the same day. The motion set aside verdict was denied as well as the conviction order was entered, citing the code section 74-4. And I believe I'm over my time. I apologize for that. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Brandon Fellers. I'm Assistant Commonwealth Attorney in the City of Chesapeake, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellee. First, I'd like to address the assignment of error with respect to the Court of Appeals decision affirming the trial court with the clerical error remaining in back for the clerical error, which made the other two assignments of error moot. The 5/15/2015 correction order that was entered by the Circuit Court does render the other two assignments of error moot. The record in this case supports the position that the trial court inadvertently found the appellant guilty under the City Code 74-4 and not 18-2-103. This is evident from the statement of facts in the Joint Appendix, page 13 to 14, where appellant made an oral motion to set aside the verdict immediately after the defendant was convicted. The argument that appellant advanced at that time was the same argument presented to this court, that appellant cannot be convicted of City Code Section 74-4, so the conviction must be vacated. The trial court heard arguments and denied the motion to set aside the verdict because of the face of the summons charging.
May I ask you this? The statement of facts, which are not contested, says, the trial judge says, I convicted Holloway under 18.2-103. That's what the trial judge said. That's what I did. That was the trial I heard. That was the arraignment I had. That was the conviction I entered. I'm looking at some orders that don't reflect that, and I'm going to correct it. Isn't the only issue before us whether or not the corrected order is truly within the trial court's discretionary power to correct a clerical mistake?
Essentially, yes. The appellant did not object. At the Court of Appeals level, when they remanded it back to the trial court, the appellant should have objected that the Court of Appeals did not have jurisdiction to remand it back because the appellant's position should have been that.
Well, I'm not so sure of that. I mean, the trial court could have said, oh, actually, I was confused. I was trying to convict him of concealment under a city code provision which has nothing whatsoever to do with concealment. In theory, that could have been said. But obviously, that's not what happened.
Correct. And I mean, the issue is resolved by the correction order because the trial court heard arguments right after the conviction, heard arguments on the motion to set aside, and the trial court noted the stipulation of facts.
So basically, we have got to jump that one puddle before we can say anything more in the case. We've got to say that non-pro-tunk correction order was unlawful for whatever reason.
And I submit that it was correct, that there was ambiguity in the sentencing order from the motion set aside, stating that it was the Commonwealth and concealment, and then the disposition order saying that it was a local code, which included the state BCC code and did include concealment in the disposition order. There was ambiguity within those two orders, and that is why the Court of Appeals was correct in remanding it back, and that's why the trial court, the correction order, should be the final order and the correct order of the court, which makes the the other two assignments of error removed. Also, I'd like to point out that the disposition order from June 9, 2014, that's in Joint Appendix 4, shows that appellant was guilty as charged. That means that appellant was guilty as charged in the summons, which means, in parentheses, 74-4, 18-2-1-3, concealment, less than $200. The Virginia Crime Code on the disposition order, LAR 2337-01, is also this BCC for the state code violation of concealment in 18-2-103.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think the judge didn't include 18.2-103 on this June 9th order? Because they already had an argument concerning the fact, though, whether it was under the city ordinance.
The position that was a clerical error, because the trial court did hear arguments on the very issue that appellant's bringing forth today. And so it's clear that the trial court judge intended to convict under 18-2-103. Now, I think the clerk probably put the city code in the disposition order, and so that's why there's ambiguity in between the two orders. But once it was remanded back, the trial court judge noticed that there was a discrepancy in the order and clarified the ambiguity in the correction order dated 5/15.
Right, because the ambiguity is not really in the two orders. The ambiguity is in what the judge said as opposed to what the order said.
Correct. And I take the position that that order was a mere clerical mistake. It was not a substantive revision. The correction order did not make any substantive changes. And I can distinguish the amend case. In the amend case, that was the local code 22-2 was a concealed weapon, which there is no separate Henrico local code for that. So the conviction order in that case read 22 Henrico County Ordinance 22-2 incorporating Virginia Code Section 18-2-308. And the court held by that reading of the conviction order, he was only convicted of 22-2.
I mean, that wasn't a clerical mistake because the trial court actually thought that's what the conviction was, that there was such an ordinance incorporating that.
That's correct. And but the difference in an amend that they didn't remand that back to the trial court to fix a clerical error. So specifically an amend, it actually uses the language incorporating. So it's clear that they were trying to use a local code to incorporate state code in that case. In this case, there is a separate City of Chesapeake code for concealment. Which
how do we know that? I didn't see that in the record anyway.
I believe it was filed in, it should be filed in my response brief.
But that's not part of the record if you're telling us that something is not in the record.
Understand that. Correctly.
Are you talking about the Chesapeake City Code provision on concealment?
There is a separate city code provision for concealment.
Section 46-5 is the code.
Yes, Your Honor. So
it's a question of judicial notice. We can take judicial notice of law.
So my point is that...
But the reality is when it went back, the judge didn't put that code section in the order. Right? I mean, she used the state code section when it went back.
That's correct.
Which indicates she never intended to use a Chesapeake code.
That's correct.
So I guess I don't understand why the relevance to whether or not there's a Chesapeake code is relevant.
Only in the sense that in the amend case, they were referencing that it was only the city code, and in the amend case, it did say it was void ab initio because that statute never existed, so the court did not have authority. They issued an order that was not warranted by law, so they said that the order was void ab initio. But in this case, it is just a mere clerical error. The court did intend to convict under the state code as evidenced by concealment language and then the corrected order. And so that relieves any argument about the case, the order being void ab initio. And also in the amend case, was not about a clerical mistake. As I said, here we did remand it back to correct a clerical mistake, and amend. They didn't do that. It was never remanded back to the Henrico Trial Court to determine what code section and then was convicted of. It was clear that he was convicted under 22-2 that did not give the county under the Dillon rule a legal basis to incorporate 182308. And here I go, did not have a separate code section for concealment. And as I said, there was a separate code section for concealment in the city of Chesapeake. So initially, the Commonwealth's first position is the clerical, the correction order that was entered on 5-15-15 did correct any mistakes, which renders the other two assignments of error moot. And the Commonwealth respectfully requests that the court affirm the Court of Appeals' decision in all respects.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 52 seconds. Do you want to use it?
I know we keep going around and around whether this was subject to amendment by non-protunct order, but I think, as has been pointed out, if in fact the court's intention had been to convict under city code, that should have been on the order. If in fact it had been the court's intention to convict under 182-103, that should have been on the initial order. As I've said, you know, the courts speak through the orders. This is a situation where the trial court judge had been made aware of what the issue was, whether it was misunderstanding as to precisely what the issue was before the court or decision on her own part that that was not appropriate in this case. The fact of the matter is that the order entered on June 9, 2014, which should have or could have included the language 18.2-103 if that was the court's intention, was not on there, but rather 74-4.
Let me ask you this. What prejudice would there be to your client as a result of it?
Well, he's convicted, Your Honor. I mean, certainly, and that's the problem, is if this...
But, the evidence was sufficient to find him guilty of the state concealment statute, wasn't it?
Because at the time, it was not the proper form of charge.
And he had notice of it because it was on the summons, right?
Well, he had notice that he was being tried under a code section that incorporated the motor vehicle code. That is what the charging document is for, to give the notice. And granted, it did have the language concealment, but 74-4, as was brought to the trial court's attention, does not incorporate the concealment statute.
Certainly it doesn't, but 18.2-103 is the concealment statute, and it was right there in front of him. Right.
Well, I guess the question then is it the defense's obligation to point out these errors to the trial court at the beginning of the trial? You know, or is it the Commonwealth's obligation to ensure that there's a clean record, that in fact the charging documents reflect what's intended to be charged?
Call the next case.
Thank you.